You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I am your host, Rick Franzi. I host this business talk show, which airs live on Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. If you're listening to this show at some point in the future as a podcast, I'd like to say thanks for joining the program today. I think you're going to enjoy both of our guests. And I would also encourage you to consider listening to the show live during our broadcast time, heard exclusively here on octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, make better decisions. And we do that by interviewing thought leaders and peer executives from around the country who have transferable knowledge, ideas, and experiences. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. If you'd like to learn more about Smart Business Magazine, then visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. SBNonline.com. Critical Mass Coast to Coast is brought to you through a partnership of Critical Mass for Business with Executive Forums business owners in select markets across the U.S. Executive Forums is an international organization committed to helping members take their businesses to the next level. My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, was the first book ever written about the peer group experience and is available for sale on, guess what? Amazon.com. You can find it simply by typing my name, Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. If you'd like to learn more about CEO peer groups, visit executiveforums.com, www.executiveforums.com. I'd like to turn our attention to my first guest, and we're going to have a ranging conversation. Paul, welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast.
Hi, how are you there today?
We're doing well. Give me the proper pronunciation of your last name, please, Paul.
It's Mosensen. Paul
Mosensen. Just like it's spelled.
And New Spark Marketing is NU Spark Marketing.
Perfect. Tell us a bit about New Spark Marketing, please.
Sure. Well, as you said, I'm based outside Philadelphia, so it's a little cooler out here. We're a lead generation company, but I say that because that's universal and understood by salespeople and marketers. You know, but in reality, we can use terms like lead management, funnel optimization, demand generation, inbound marketing. In reality, we use content and message strategy as the key to quality lead growth and increasing firm's revenue. And why? Because it's the message that fuels the prospect to lead to sales funnel. So we optimize the tactics within that funnel so that quality leads are generated via lead nurturing, and leads are converted into sales opportunities. You know, Rick, with the right message to the right audience, with the right value proposition, and written in the buyer's language with keywords, so SEO is in mind, prospects will leave websites and landing pages without downloading content or performing a desired conversion action, which in most cases is an email address for an exchange for content. That's what companies want, email addresses. That's leads. All those tactics we do, like the pay-per-click, SEO, online media, social media, but they won't work as well without the right message strategy and the right conversion mechanism. And complex B2B sales need a sound lead nurturing strategy. So we manage all the entire process from click to sale. That's it in a mouthful.
Yeah, and it is a the technology has allowed advertisers and marketers to reach prospects in new and exciting ways. But it has certainly been a very rapidly changing kind of medium as well, which from your explanation of what New Spark Marketing does, really sounds like you're right in the middle of all this evolving technology and helping your clients determine how to get the best ROI for it as well. Is that true, Paul?
Yeah, that is true. And it's a matter of bringing marketing and sales people together aligned, because that's how a best-in-class company works, is to optimize that entire process.
Yeah, and for many that are in listening audience today, or maybe in the future off of iTunes or some other way as a podcast,
if they haven't grown up in a larger organization with a sales and a marketing function, maybe where salespeople are separate from marketing people, it's hard for them to appreciate how different sales and marketing people can be and how different their focus within an organization, even an organization that's not that large, but large enough to have two separate functions called marketing and sales, how different those people see the world. That must be your experience by trying to bring them together as well, Paul.
That's true. You know, especially with social media and other new channels out there, it's like a baton. We have to decide, any company is, when does marketing start and stop before sales takes over? And that's something, it's case by case within a company. Because you think about social media, I mean, it's content and marketing that are out there creating those relationships. But at the end of the day, it's the marketing people have to say, okay, Mr. Salesperson, you take over and close the deal. So a lot of times it is a an optimization effort where both departments have to have the same goals and communicate the process properly.
Sometimes it's as simple as getting an agreement on what is a lead.
Oh, so believe me. that's the first thing you have to do is define your audience. And not just that, though, but I don't know if your audience has heard of the phrase BANT, which is a qualification. It stands for budget, authority, need, and time. And your prospects can be qualified based on those qualifications that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that's where it first starts, is marketing and sales agree to what those qualifications are.
And that's a very healthy discussion. Sometimes it's until you probably get involved with companies and help them to go through that process, the CEO or president may think everybody knows what a lead is, but it's sort of like, depends on what your definition of the word is. I mean, it really can be a worthwhile exercise to get everybody at a common starting point
is a lead. Especially at the beginning when you're, we do demand generation, so if you do a white paper and people download it, well, do you call that a lead?
Exactly.
It may not be a lead yet. It's probably just a name. It's not a lead yet until it's qualified. But even though the word lead is so general and universal, but it's really just a name first.
I remember one time when I was the VP of sales and marketing for a technology company out here, we passed out what we thought from the marketing arm to the sales group were some qualified potential leads, and I won't forget it. But one of the sales guys came in to me and said, "It's been a long time since somebody handed me the yellow pages and told me they had just given me a set of leads." So from his perspective, they were unqualified names, but from the marketing's perspective, they thought they'd given him some, worthwhile names to follow up on. So let's go on a little. I'd like to ask you if you could share with our audience your view or vision of your guiding principle. You know, what's that overarching belief system that you have that helps you to kind of lead and grow New Spark Marketing? Please, Paul?
Sure. To me, it's all about relationships and really have that sincere need to help firms grow. You know, I've been in the advertising business for over 25 years. Most recently as a media director at an advertising agency until I started my own firm. So as a media director, you deal with salespeople and clients, all kinds of people. So through the years, you understand, how to deal with different kinds of people and their personalities and sort of overcome ones that don't mesh with you and really learn to focus on what counts, which is having the same vision of a win-win partnership where both sides collaborate and contribute to what counts, which is the client's revenue and profit. I mean, I'm a virtual firm, and so I have people around me who are part of my tactical alliance team, and they're great at what they do. And more importantly, they're great people, because that's who I want around me. So at the end of the day, people buy from people, despite all the technology and the words that are out there. So that's my guiding principle, is helping companies, knowledge, experience, and all that, but also building a win-win relationship.
It is, I'm old enough or been in, around industry long enough to remember when sales organizations were actually worried that they were going to be replaced by automation, that somehow these fancy systems and online ordering, and eventually you wouldn't need this expensive salesperson to go on and meet with customers and drive demand. And regardless of how much technology there is, it is still a people buy from people in most cases.
Yeah, now there's certainly companies that are e-commerce based, and that might be a little bit different. You know, if I need something, right. I think I'll go online, find it, and order it without even knowing the person. That's a little bit different. So I think we're talking more about the larger, complex solutions that companies need.
Right, but those people would have gone somewhere else and just bought it off the shelf in the past. You know, I think they wouldn't have needed, maybe in many cases, to have a salesperson. But for B2B sales and complex sales, in technology sales in particular, it's a people-facing business. Paul, we're going to take our first sponsorship break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask if you have any direct or indirect experience with peer groups, and if you have, if you could share that with our audience. But first, we're going to have a word from a sponsor.
All right.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plans and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
Welcome back to Critical Mass Coast to Coast. This is your host, Rick Franzi. Before the break, I said we're going to ask Paul if he could share any recent experience, direct experience with the peer group. And Paul, it sounds like you might have some experience to relate to our audience. Would you please be so kind?
I will be kind. I'm a member of a Philadelphia senior management peer organization here in Philly, and recently did present my business model to them, a team of peers across different organizations and industries. So I explained this whole funnel operation that I'm optimizing as a consultant, and you know, I thought that was interesting, but I think I spoke it a little fast, and I think they were a little overwhelmed about everything I know. And you know, what came out of from their end, from just in their experiences, was that I needed a little more focus and a little more concentration on a certain aspect of what I do.
Okay.
I can't help it, though. I like to learn everything. But, you know, sometimes the more people you talk to, the more confused you get, and we've all gone through that. In reality, I'm a lead generation consultant, lead management consultant, and that means I do need to know as much as possible to assess the entire funnel. So certainly my initial outreach has to be something focused, and I do use lead nurturing many times because that's something people don't really understand, and when you a company that does lead nurturing, you know, shorten sales cycles and things like that and build revenue. It's the entire funnel that I optimize, and I do bring specialists in to solve problems based on those assessments. So, you know, regarding, you know, the peer group, you know, they all, I think coming in, they have to understand what I do, what my goal is, and I enjoy what I'm doing. But, you know, but obviously, you know, that you take their experiences and they can help you do hone your message, you know, with the goal to open doors to firms that need help. So there's always some good guidance there. You know, they don't understand the business as much as I do, but, you know, from their perspective, you know, you always need to focus and show your value.
It's nice to get a fresh set of eyes sometimes on things that you have been so close to for so long that you just think they're obvious, you know, self-evident. And having some people who maybe you back up and rethink, or at least think over what you, how you say things and what you say, I think, and how you present your business can be very healthy for many entrepreneurs because it takes out some of the familiarity that you have with your business. Because many times when you're properly presenting to prospects, they're not that familiar with the what you do and how holistic your approach is, I would think, as well.
You know where the bias is because spending many years in an advertising agency, there was no focus, really, of a full-service agency. What do you do? We do everything. We do ads, we do media, we do PR, strategy, research. You know, that's what we do. We help companies grow.
Right.
And we have specialists that come in and focus on what you need.
Let's talk about business challenges. We all have them.
Yep.
And the reason why I like to ask our guest, Paul, about that is because what I find is many times the challenge that our guest has is shared by many in the audience, but the ideas or steps that our guest is taking to mitigate that challenge sometimes are new to our audience, and they then can benefit from your experience. So could you share your business challenge and what you're doing about it?
Sure. Business challenges. I'm a one-man virtual firm, and I'm trying to position myself for larger clients because, at the corporate side, you dealt with larger budgets and things like that. You know, I'm targeting probably between 100 and 1,000 employee companies who have a sales force and they're in a competitive environment, you know, but lack the optimization we spoke about. You know, much of my income comes from other digital projects, website projects, pay-per-click projects, things like that. But I'm ambitious, and I do want to provide more services. That's what drives me. So the challenges I face are, sometimes I call it priority management, because I'm doing a lot of social media, sales calls, project management, networking, blogging, current client work, my own inbound marketing, plus taking care of my 14-year-old daughter because I'm a single father. Trying to do all that as one person is not easy. Some of the other issues, of course, is growth and building sales like anybody goes through themselves. Since I'm a newer firm, been around not that long, you know, there's always a need for case studies and try to overcome that because, listen, every company starts off from a seed. And it's always a challenge to grow a business early on. But I have to overcome that with my knowledge and approach and the people and platforms that surround me. So my goal is to limit the objections, and I'm confident I can once I close the door, but if you want to talk about challenges, well, that's it. It's just every day is different. Just want to make sure that I, spend my time wisely, and continue to position myself to have larger companies see what I do and say this makes sense.
A constant challenge for entrepreneurs is two precious things, which once you get rid of them, they're gone and they're hard to get back: time and money.
There you go.
And it really, having being an entrepreneur myself and having worked for years in large companies and companies of all sizes, startups, mid-market, Fortune 100, whatever, you really don't appreciate. You say how important time and money are, and I always did, and I always believed them. But really, when you're building a business, you really, really understand you need to be cautious with your funds and cautious with your time, because once they're spent, man, they're gone. Interesting.
Interesting you say that, because I'm looking at the best ways to utilize the funds that I have to continue to grow the business. You have to be cautious. You have to think, does this really make sense to help build my ROI? And so is it a business coach? Is it a virtual assistant? In combination of those efforts, part-time salesperson, those kinds of things. So you have to look at all those and see what really makes sense and if they really be comfortable.
And you need a return on your investment. I mean, okay. ROI for an entrepreneur is huge, because if you misallocate your funds and you don't get the ROIs that you expect, it's harder to recover from than larger companies that, can fund it out of other sources. And it's a lessons learned kind of a thing. So I'm on the same page with you, Paul. I can appreciate those challenges. So let's get a little more personal, in that I would like to ask you if you can recall a time in your career where you learned a valuable lesson, but it came from a difficult or even maybe painful business experience. And if you have one, would you be willing to share it with our guests here on Critical Mass Coast to Coast?
Yes, I am. Yes, I will. I have one here. There was a few things, but I've decided to cover this one toward the end of my corporate employment, which is before I started my business. And really, the lesson is, no matter what you do, never take anything for granted. Don't feel like you're working for a company and everybody loves you, that you're going to retire there. Never take anything for granted. Every time I've worked for a firm, you know, I know that I give my all, extra hours, weekends. You know, we've all done that. You know, you're always constantly trying to prove your worth. I was laid off from my job after 10 years, after all that blood and guts and work I did, because they decided to go to a different direction. So it ended up being, you know, they want to call you family, right? You know, everybody's gone through that. Your family, you're part of this. And all of a sudden, a consultant comes in or whatever happens, and things change. Things change for the owner's benefit. So one can get jaded on the corporate world. You know, I started my company to be my own boss and make a name for myself. You know, sometimes you do want to prove your last firm wrong. The lesson is, you know, whatever you do, keep working hard. Keep educating yourself for the future. And prepare yourself for the next job in case something goes wrong. Don't assume comfort. Strive for your own success. Make the right decisions that contribute to your growth every day. And that's my lesson.
Wow. Wow. You just gave, where do I start? Thank you for your candid honesty about your lesson learned. I find whenever we ask this question, and I get to ask this question many times each week because I always ask my guests this, the lessons that they've learned are foundational to how they view the world moving forward, and it is they're really a powerful lesson. And so this vicarious learning that I really believe in about business owners sharing with each other, we are of the generation that is learning that you are responsible for your own career and for your own skills development. And if there are those listening to this radio program today who are working in corporate America, my advice to you is take advantage of every training class and outside teaching seminar, whatever that they will send to you on their dime, because it only enriches you. Right, Paul?
That's great. No, I've done those. And at the end of the day, it's all about you, or all about me, depending on what text you use. But that's true. Take advantage, because you never know when you'll need those skills.
That's right. And if you got to pay for them on your own dime, out of your own cash flow, it's a lot more of a decision, like we were just talking about ROI, than if it's an expense account item and you can go and learn skills. It is amazing what can be learned by a seminar, a half-day class, or something. So, if someone would like to find more about you and your firm, Paul, how do they do that?
Go to my website, www.newsparkmarketing, that's newsparkmarketing.com. My website's a little bit different than most websites that you see. I wanted to do something different than the usual what I do services. But I showcase this whole funnel optimization. It's a lead generation journey from planning the sales and all the elements in between. So I take people on this magical journey through the process of prospect to lead to sale. So it's really interesting, and I urge people to go on there and check it out. I've also got a list of lead generation tools and links to free ebooks to download. www.newsparkmarketing.com, NUSparkMarketing.com. And contact me there. And you can follow me on LinkedIn. Find my firm on LinkedIn, follow me on Twitter, which is at NewSparkMKTG. And you can also find my name, Paul Mosenson, on Google+. Or just call me, 610-812-2725.
That's 610-812-2725, huh?
Yep. Whatever. Hey. Lots of ways to reach people nowadays.
It is. It's amazing. And I will follow you on Twitter, and I will reach out to you on LinkedIn as well. This show will be turned into a podcast shortly by the radio station, and we'll be putting it on our podcasting sites, including iTunes, over the weekend. I'll send you a link, Paul. if you would be so kind to link to it from your site as well, I would appreciate you doing that.
Sure, that'd be great.
It was fun getting to know you and having you on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. Best of luck with the business, and I'll talk with Ken Wax about maybe having you back on sometime in 2012 so we can get an update on how the business is growing.
Very good.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the time.
You're welcome.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to turn our attention to our second guest. His name is Tom Krekel. Tom has been a guest on Critical Mass Coast to Coast in the past. I've asked him to come back because I'm intrigued by a part of what he does with companies in his area to help them around stages of growth, ladies and gentlemen. And so Tom Krekel will be joining us after these words from a sponsor.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to Critical Mass Coast to Coast. As I said before the break, our second guest today is Tom Krekel. Tom is CEO of Full Sail Strategies. Tom, welcome to the radio program.
Oh, well, thank you, Rick. Happy to be here.
Why don't we first, before we get into the content of why I've asked you to be our guest today, if you could give our audience a sense for what Full Sail Strategies is and kind of why your clients do business with you. What makes your services different in the market?
Well, what I do is I work with primarily fast growth companies that have between $5 million and about $250 million in sales who are trying to scale their businesses. So I'm not an expert on Six Sigma or Lean or really not even sales management. We concentrate on the issues specific to people that are growing companies. And the reason I'm interested in that area, Rick, is that as a founder of a business way back in 83 who grew the business, I could have benefited, you know, just so much by having somebody help me. I think that, you know, if you look at the statistics, something like 80% of new startups fail in the first 5 years, and then of that 20% that continue after 5 years, only 20% of that group are still around after 10. And I just think that's a tragedy because the success of small business is really foundational to this country's future. So I asked myself, what could I do to help? You know, what could I do? And as I left the newspaper business that I was in for 30 years, running papers, owning newspapers, and managing those kinds of operations, I was drawn to the idea of helping other people like me to not step in the same, you know, rabbit holes that I had.
So if after the first 10 years, you said after the first 5 years, only 20% of the businesses have survived.
Yep.
Right? So after five years, 100 entrepreneurs start a business this year. We come around 5 years later, there's only going to be 20% of them or 20 people left that we can interview. And then come back to that sampling again in another 5 years, which is a total of 10 years, there's only 20% of those initial second group of 20 that's left, which means there's only four people standing.
Exactly. 96% fail or are gone,
wow.
You know, however you want to look at it. So only 4% survive 10 years. So the idea here is survivability is not assured. And again, what a tragedy. All people's the effort, the blood, the sweat, the tears, the money, the time and effort that goes in. And sometimes, you know, it just isn't meant to be. The premise wasn't thought out right. Maybe the strategy's wrong. But you know what? Fortune magazine, the late 90s, did an article on why do CEOs fail. And this was more about CEOs themselves. But the lesson bears repeating. It really wasn't about strategy or resources or those kinds of things. It was about execution, not being able to get people all rowing in the same direction, and about errors that were made by the leader. And what I find with small business leaders is that they don't realize how much they have to change and morph how they lead as they add people, which is kind of what led me to the research and some of the things we'll be talking about today. I was interested in, you know, what are the lessons of many, many other businesses out there that have succeeded, and why do firms fail? And if you look around, there's plenty of information, plenty of research, and it's really most of it corroborates each other. It's not like the study that we've based our model around was a study of about 650 businesses that were entrepreneurial, and by that I mean between 0 and 500 employees on the front range of Colorado and in Silicon Valley. And the research that was done on these companies showed that adding people is the primary driver of complexity in an organization, and it's the primary determinant of the kinds of issues that are going to come up. And so that if you understand the model and understand what has happened to others, you can basically see around the corner, see what's coming your way as you grow.
You know, Tom, you say that, and I'm sure some in our listening audience think, really, adding people is the determinant of the complexity of the business? But as I've thought about this and doing some research to prepare for your interview today, what struck me as well, which I really hadn't thought about, is, and other guests on Critical Mass shows have kind of made this point as well, that the most complex thing that you add to your company are your employees. Far more than any piece of equipment or plant or anything else that you add to the to your organization, it's the people that you hire. And so it makes perfect sense to me that the role of the CEO becomes more complex as they scale their organization, which is in direct correlation to them being a fast growth company, because you always hit these marks at which you need to just add more people to deliver the product or service to the volume that the business is scaled to. So I perfectly get people being the determinant of complexity in the business now.
Yeah, and sort of along that line, a lot of people, when they first hear of the model, say, well, wait a minute, I'm a service company, and he's a manufacturing company. How can this apply to both of us? And, you know, the basic premise of the 7 stages of growth model is simply this, that people are the business. People are your business. And in all the research and all the ongoing experience in working with companies that I and people and other people like me that specialize in growth find is that the most common challenge in companies from all industries is people. Most issues that companies face either start or end with people. So it doesn't matter if you're running an accounting firm with 100 people or a steel, you know, fabrication kind of an operation with maybe 30, or even a landscaping operation with 5. It's the number of people that you have that will determine, in any industry, the kinds of issues and challenges you're going to encounter.
Tom, I'm really fascinated by this, and I'd like you to explain to the audience a little bit. My sense from my kind of preparing for your appearance here on the program today is that these 7 stages of growth and the research that was done really has evolved into somewhat of a predictive model to help a CEO sort of see into the future. Because, you know, many, many times it's the hardest lessons that you learn are by virtue of the next phase that you haven't had any previous experience to prepare for, and you've only learned a lesson by virtue of the experience. But it sounds like and seems like the stages of growth are actually a predictive tool to sort of help the CEO see what's coming in the future. Can you explain how the model works and how you help your clients with it?
Absolutely, Rick. So, first of all, the model is predicated on the number of employees you have, and that includes part-timers. It doesn't include independent contractors, but it's the number of staff you have. So, the model starts out with a stage called startup, and it typically goes up to from 1 to 10 employees are in the startup phase. The second stage, ramp-up, has between 11 and 19. Then delegation, 20 people up to 34. The professional stage is 35 to 57, and then comes integration, which is about 58 to 95, and then strategic, which goes up to 160, and then the final stage that goes up to about 500 is what we call visionary. And so you're right, you don't just sort of land in a stage, it's a continuum. You move towards. So if you're a stage three company, first of all, some of the stage four issues will start to come your way, and any issues you haven't resolved in the prior stage stay with you. So some of the corollaries, if you will, of the model are that there are typically some key challenges that are associated with each stage, and if you don't address them and deal with them, corollary number one is that they don't go away. They just keep pulling you down. Another one is that time does make a difference. So if you've been a 10-person company for 5 years, obviously chaos that you feel can destabilize the company. Obviously, you've had a little more time to get used to that size. So the speed at which you're going through these stages does make a difference. The other corollary is that with each stage, there are sort of hidden issues to be aware of. So, for example, in stage one, this is typically what we call startup, and it's really just about survival. And what you see here is that the leader is, if you think of, there's kind of three faces for a leader. The specialist, who, maybe is the craftsman or knows the trade that they're in, if it's whether they're in a baking company or a roofing company or a semiconductor, a board manufacturer. The leader's usually a specialist that, okay, I want to take this knowledge I have and go out there. But he's also maybe 40% visionary because he's got a vision or she's got an idea of where she wants to go, and only 10% what we call manager. So if you think of it as between the three kinds of faces of a leader, you've got being a specialist, being a manager, being a visionary. At that stage one, there's a lot of, you're still the specialist, but you're leading with a lot of vision. By the time you get to the third stage, delegation, you have turned into a 60% of your time must be spent as a manager, and only 10% in terms of vision, and about maybe 30% on your specialty. But most of your time at that time at point is worrying about people, and now you've become what is it can no longer be a CEO-centric company. That's the first point when you have about 20 to 35 people, that you've got to become an enterprise-centric company. And that's when starting to identify leaders, starting to make people less generalists and putting people in slots who are a little more expert. And so, for example, when I started a company way back when, in 1983, I had a person who was my bookkeeper, and as we grew through ramp up, we added people, and she was fine. And then when I got to a point where, in fact, I used to do the payroll. I used to do a lot of the billing and help her, and she was my helper, and then she did it. And then eventually, I needed a true controller, somebody could help analyze costs and who could do some planning. And so one of the hard tasks for people as they go through is figuring out what they need next, and then putting the right people in place, because necessarily you're going to have to make changes, and your leadership style is going to have to change. Does that sort of make sense to you?
Yeah, Tom, I'm thinking there's a certain comfort in knowing that this research has been done, it's been validated, and the model is a predictive tool such that a bit of the uncertainty, this must bring a bit of certainty to what must be a challenging time for a fast-growing company. And once you get them agreeing to an understanding and recognizing that, this must be a comforting tool for CEOs of fast growth companies, because it begins to give them a way to deal with the uncertainty and identify the problems and predict the future problems. So how, in your working with clients, you've got a very clear metric of size of business, number of employees, this is where you are in the stage, here's what we need to do to get you ready to deal with what you're facing now and how to get ready for the future. What is your, fast forward a little bit for the audience, what are your clients saying to you after they've been working with you for a period of time, and this tool is enabling them probably to move even more quickly into the next stages by virtue of the business growing?
I'd say the number one thing is that they didn't have awareness that issues were issues. For example, many times I see a lot of these problems crop up at the delegation stage, where they're at the 20 to 34 person stage. And for example, one of the top issues that occurs then that we can predict is there's problems with staff buy-in. And why is that? Well, and the second major problem is what we call a leadership staff gap, and they're related. Leadership staff gap means that the leader thinks everybody knows what's going on and what the status of the company is, but they don't. All right, the leader thinks, because I know it, they know it. So what starts to happen is people start to disengage. When a company is small and there's 10 people, it's hard not to know what's going on. When a company has 30 people and the CEO and the leader is off doing whatever she's doing or he's doing, it's common. And therefore, if you know that's coming, first of all, what we use is we use some diagnostics to bring the leadership team in and other employees to help the CEO have awareness of the issue. I think one of the values of the model is giving them a language to say, oh, that's why we're feeling that way. That's what that's about. When we use these assessments, people will, we actually have a list of 27 things, and then when you give it to, you know, 5, 6, 7 department heads and the boss, and they all come back with kind of the same 8 or 9 things that pop out and 5 or 6 that are really central. First of all, it validates that, hey, we're all feeling this, and there's a name for it. It might be that our core values aren't clear. It might be that we've got an issue with hiring quality people. Once you get to the next stage, which we call professional, the top issue becomes putting in processes. And what you see there pop up is everybody's talking about, geez, we're really not good at project management. We're weak there. We don't have systems that are in place. We're having difficulty diagnosing problems. So just giving them a framework to say, oh, we're not dysfunctional. There's nothing wrong with us. This is what goes with the territory. I think that's one of the main benefits that clients I've worked with identify.
Well, that is very powerful and very clear to me how I could see how that would almost be a relief within your clients that, okay, it's not us, it's everyone like us. Now how do we solve it? And again, entrepreneurs are very good at, and business leaders are very good at solving problems once they get a handle on it. And it almost sounds like in some of your engagements, you're almost acting as a doctor. And by that, what I mean is you're helping them focus on the issue, the disease, not the symptom. You know what I'm saying? You're actually going a level deeper with them and helping them ferret out what's really causing
right.
the behavior that they see.
Yes. So oftentimes, you know, I had a case recently where there was not clarity around roles and responsibilities, for example. And what happened was that, you know, there was quite a different understanding or perception between the leader and everybody else about who had responsibility for what. His take on it was, well, of course you're in charge of that. Well, of course you can do this. Well, of course you have that authority. Well, of course. And they all were shaking their heads in unison saying, well, we didn't know that. We didn't. You know. And so part of the process that we use is just to sort of flush out the elephants in the room and get them out there. And it's as you said, it's comforting for them to know that, all right, you know, maybe I wasn't handling this the best way I could, but I've never grown a company before, and apparently this is what comes with the territory. So it sort of takes the blame game off and says, you know, this is just part of what you've got to watch for. Now, in turn, as you see, as you're continuing to grow, you can look ahead and say, ah, well, in stage 4, employee turnover tends to be an issue. What can we do now to address that? Why does that occur? And what is it we can do today to head that off so we don't have to deal with that or solve it and have it rear its, you know, its head when we're a stage 4 company? Let's deal with it now. And in turn, if cash flow is an issue from stage 1 and 2, which it is, by stage 3 it should be, resolved. They should be under control. There should be measures in place. Okay, so what we help them do is focus on making sure that the stage one and two issues are addressed by putting in initiatives, by getting them out front and center, because as you say, as once a problem is identified, most leaders are good at handling them, and groups are good at taking them on once they all have alignment about, hey, this is an issue, this is something we've got to work on together.
Hey, you said earlier, too, that if problems aren't solved in earlier stages, they continue to be a problem in future stages. So it's almost like this mountain keeps getting bigger. If you didn't fix it in an earlier stage, and now you have all those problems plus the new problems, at a point at which it would seem that it would become untenable, maybe, and then become the governor for future growth for the company.
Yeah, exactly. It's like trying to run a race and then having somebody attach little weights to your belt and they just slow you down.
Right.
And somebody was saying to me the other day that people don't mind solving problems at work. That isn't what causes stress. It's solving the same problem over and over and over and never feeling like the root cause is addressed. Yeah. So that's what causes stress. And if you can get those things resolved, once you fix them and button them down, you're done, and now you're on to the next thing.
So if someone listening today on the program or at some future point, maybe off of Apple iTunes or one of our other podcasting vehicles, and they'd like to learn more about these stages of growth and you and the work that you do for your clients at Full Sail Strategies, how do they locate you, Tom? How do they get in touch with you?
Well, we have a Full Sail Strategies website, so it's Full Sail as in sailboat strategies. And on that site, there is a description of the seven stages with a little summary of sort of the attributes of each one. And that's probably the easiest way. Our contact information is located there. So I'd recommend people just go to fullsailstrategies.com to follow up.
And if they wanted to find you on social media outlets, LinkedIn, etc., how would they do that, Tom?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn as Tom Krekler, Thomas Krekel, I guess it is, available there.
How do you spell Krekel?
Well, K-R-E-K-E-L.
Just like it sounds.
Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S. I'm in the Mountain West here, so every so often people say, well, is it T-O-M-A-S? No, it's T-H-O-M-A-S. We have a lot of Spanish Tomases around here.
Exactly. Okay, well, Thomas Krekel of Full Sail Strategies, it was nice to have you just give us a sliver of what you know about these stages of growth and how your clients are helping use the tool to continue to grow at a rapid rate. I've enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Rick.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Hope you've enjoyed both conversations that we've had today here on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. On behalf of our producer, Paul, and all the people here working feverishly on the radio program, we thank you for listening live or possibly at the future as a podcast. If you would like to listen to us live, feel free to check us out on Thursdays at 3 o'clock West Coast time, heard exclusively on octalkradio.net. This is Rick Franzi saying until we talk again, I hope that all your decisions move your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass Coast to Coast, only on octalkradio.net.